Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest tonight is Helene Wecker. Helene, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to have you here. Tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a writer, which is how I think most people listening to your podcast would have heard of me. It's through my book, The Golem and the Genie, which came out from HarperCollins a couple years ago now. And it's sort of a historical literary fantasy about two supernatural creatures in the end of the 19th century in New York City, who find themselves there through separate, rather improbable means and end up having to survive and pass as human.
And one of my favorite books of whatever year it was published.
Oh,
I have a bad
cool
memory, but I quite enjoyed it, so thank you for that. And my wife enjoyed it too. She told me to be sure to tell you that she liked the book very much.
Oh, awesome. I'm glad.
So, I will not ask when the next book is coming out because I'm sure that's annoying. I pretend I didn't even say that.
It's eventually, slowly but eventually. I am a very slow writer, unfortunately.
Well, you know, it takes time for good writing.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about your lovely novel or your writing ways.
Thank God.
You may not have shown up if that were the topic of the podcast. We are here to talk about something much more important.
Yes.
Star Trek.
Ah. Oh.
How we live and breathe Star Trek.
Now, yes.
Now, would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I am. I think I would still consider myself under the umbrella of Star Trek fandom. I am not a core Trekkie the way that I used to be. But yeah, I'm a Star Trek fan.
Now, how did this fandom begin?
I think it's this way for a number of your listeners in that there never wasn't Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was is a science fiction fan, and he watched the original series, and you know he didn't live and breathe it. He wasn't like a Trekkie per se, but he introduced it to me. I don't even really remember watching a lot of the original series episodes, just because I think I probably watched them when I was like five. But what I do remember is buying the books when the novels started to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And way back when it was like A.C. Crispin and all of those people, and it was like, oh my gosh, they're making new stories. And I would drag my mom to the mall, and we would go to the Crocs and Bertanos and buy the one that came out that month, and I would take it home and read it seven times over. And so that was sort of my early fandom was the original series novels. Were they from Pocket? I think it was Pocket.
They were. I was just thinking about that myself, and I was Googling it, but there were Pocket editions.
And then in 87, when The Next Generation came out, of course, that was like, just like the world changed again. And I was in middle school, I think 87, I was 12 to 13. So, me and my best friend Mike were talking Next Generation at Hebrew school, and we should have been, studying our Torah portions for our bar and bat mitzvahs. And I at that point I joined the fan club, and I got my my patch and the fan club magazine and all of that, and then started reading the Next Generation novels when those came out, because those sort of came out, as I recall, sort of interspersed with the series. And then I went, when I graduated high school, I went to Carleton College. At this point, Trek had probably had become my secondary fandom. My primary fandom became Doctor Who, and that's still how it is today.
Oh, Doctor Who. We've lost many good people to Doctor Who. So the episode that you were randomly assigned was called Oasis. It's a season one episode of Enterprise, episode 20 for those folks keeping score. So let's talk a little bit about Enterprise in general, and then we'll delve into what is a fairly straightforward and awfully familiar kind of story. Not that it's bad. I mean, Enterprise has a lot of bad episodes. This is kind of a middling episode, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it. It has some good performances. It's not very surprising. The big twist at the end is not that surprising at all, really.
Mm-hmm.
But Enterprise is a show that happened. It was on for 4 seasons. Scott Bakula was on it. I like Scott Bakula.
I love Scott Bakula.
I don't love him as Captain Archer, but tell me your thoughts on Enterprise in general.
Well, okay. When Enterprise came out, I saw the first episode. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, I need to see the first episode. It's like doing my duty to see. And I didn't have a lot. I remember not having a lot of high hopes.
I was the exact opposite. I was so excited. I was like, man, I got Scott Bakula, Quantum
Leap.
He's fantastic.
Oh, I loved him in Quantum Leap. I loved him. He was so up for anything. And he was just just so willing to put himself out there and just, you know, look even like almost like an idiot sometimes, mm-hmm. but he was so wonderful doing it the whole time. And so two things I remember about that original, I guess it was the pilot. The infamous decontamination gel scene.
Oh man, talking about Seven of Nine.
Yes.
The Seven of Nine problem.
And there was a scene where is it Trip and Malcolm are on a planet, and there's a mom who's like pulling what looks like an oxygen mask away from her kid, and Trip is like yelling at the mom not to, she's abusing her kid, and I think it's Malcolm says, no, she isn't, she's weaning him. The lungs change from one form of living on one form of gas to the other at around this age, and that she was basically helping the kid to, you know, the equivalent of starting on him on solid food. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really interesting touch, that it was pointing up how new humans were at being citizens in space.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I wanted to see. But the decontamination gel scene, just, it was like everything, it was such a car crash, mm-hmm. of this is we know what audiences want, but we are doing that within the bounds of traditional Trek, and that's just not gonna pair well unless you are very subtle and very careful, and they were not going, they just weren't being subtle and careful.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those skin-crawlingly bad TV moments. So that was like, I just wasn't going to give it any more benefit of the doubt after that. That I should be nicer about it and say it's not like I saw that scene and said, well, heck, I'm done with this. It was that there was a lot of other stuff going on and other fandoms out there. And
yep.
Sometimes, you know, you have to sort of jettison the thing that, you know, you think you're only going to like about a third of the time. So that was my total exposure to Enterprise. And then you rolled the dice and gave me Oasis.
You know, it happens. Like I said in the email, someone has to watch the Enterprise episodes.
I have to say, what I really liked watching it was all the stuff I liked was like the set design,
mm-hmm.
and the tech and the elements where you're seeing them try to place it between what we currently have and the original series. The things, you know, the rooms look kind of cramped. Everything's a little dark. There's that shaky lift in engineering,
mm-hmm.
where you have to lift up the it's not like a seatbelt. It's like the safety bar on the Ferris wheel. They gotta like lift that thing up to get it. Yeah, to leave. Although it seems like it'd be faster just to take the stairs. But yeah. It's like all those neat little design touches that they spent obviously so much time on that make it look really good. And it looks almost like you crossed the Enterprise with a submarine, and then there's that script. So that was just sort of like, oh boy.
I think the one thing when I heard that they were doing a prequel series right before the original series, my biggest concern was, well, it's just going to look weird because, you know, the original series obviously shot in the 60s and special effects and sets reflect that and costumery. And I thought, well, how are they going to, you know, get this to look right and not look ridiculous? And, you know, when you think about how they evolved from where the Enterprise set and costumes are to the 60s set and costume, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But given the, you know, if you extrapolate what a starship might look like and what the uniforms might look like based on, you know, where we are now and then project into the future, it makes a lot of sense. It looks good, even though the uniforms are hard to tell people apart from because they have very subtle cues, right?
Those thin bars of color. Although I like the silver jackets, the sort of quilted jackets that they are wearing, the away team. Those are pretty. I did notice, I don't normally notice like costumes and set design. I'm not like the sort of person who cares about, you know, effects and frame rates and that, as long as it's not like really bad or distracting.
Right. Well, you're a Doctor Who fan, so.
Yes, exactly. So that was sort of surprising to me that I noticed that stuff. That, like, I noticed the phasers look a little, that, like, where it didn't quite come together was, you know, it's like, you've got these phasers that look sort of like 57 Chevys, you know, that they've got the tail fin sort of look to them. They look like a space ray from the old, you know, Asimov or Astounding Science Fiction. And the rest of the ship doesn't really look like that. So it's like, where did they get these phasers from? It was like a completely different designer. But of course, they're trying to make them look like the, you know, so it's nice. It's sort of like this nice nostalgic touch to have them there. But
They get all those touches right. And then I find all the characters problematic. And for this episode, the script, as you said, it's fine. But
Oh, can we talk about the theme song?
We will talk about the theme song right now.
Okay. Oh, that theme song.
It's awful.
It is, and it's awful, and I hope I don't like end up repeating myself too much, but it's just like another of those embodiments of, we have to do what we think the audience, that what new people are going to want, what the old audience wants, and we're going to try to mash them up together and just get it wrong as hell. I hadn't heard, I'd remembered that there was some kerfuffle over the theme song, but I hadn't heard it since that original, you know, that first episode when I saw it way back when. And so I'm listening to this thing, and at first it's like, I'm like, okay, this is nice. It looks like they're trying to do like the sort of stirring Coke commercial during the Super Bowl, sort of where we've got the montage of Americans, well, you know, US, but the world, you know, but of course America being awesome in space.
Right.
And, you know, we've got sort of almost like this Marlboro Man sort of music behind it, and but then it when like the guitar started to come in and it gets closer to the
and you're like, what is going on?
Closer to the like the chorus, I'm like, the first thing I did was I started singing. It gets like that music builds to a chorus, and I started singing "Almost Paradise." We're walking on heaven's door. You know, it's just like this 80s. Hair ballad sort of awfulness, and I'm like, what are they doing? It just didn't make any sense. And it you know, again, I know it like they were trying to do what Joss Whedon did with the Firefly theme song. That's what I've decided. They wanted to make it sort of, you know, okay, it was originally supposed to be Wagon Train in Space. We're really going to do that with sort of, you know, almost like a classically like country start. We're going to start it as like a country song, but then it's going to turn into 80s, and it's going to be about like our past, but also our future. And it's just, it just didn't work. It did not work at all.
Yeah, it was a bad choice.
It was a bad choice.
They stuck with it, which I guess is good, but No, they shouldn't. They shouldn't.
Yeah. It just turned into self-parody by the time it got to the chorus. It was just not good.
Yeah. And to be fair, I do like the montage section of it. If you mute it, I think the opening credit sequence is really good.
Yeah, especially when they get to the stuff that it's like, oh, now we're in the future. And they're like showing us what happened after the International Space Station and the space shuttles. And it's like the new designs for things. And it's like, and it's like, okay, this is really cool. This is like... This is like literal world building.
Exactly. If only I didn't have to listen to the song.
Have to listen to the song. Yes, I hear tell that in the Mirror Universe episodes that the theme song is really awesome. Yes. So I.
It's instrumental.
Yeah,
it should be.
I think I'll have to watch those episodes just because they sound like fun.
Anyway. They are good, and Scott Bakula is having fun in
them. Oh, really? Does he crack a smile?
He does.
Oh, hooray!
He's not Grumpopotamus as he is generally as Captain.
Does he ever get to sing opera?
I don't think he does.
Okay, darn it, because that's my favorite episode of Quantum Leap, is where he sang Man of La Mancha, and apparently that was actually him singing.
Oh,
that he like got to sort of use this thing about himself that no one really knew, is that he's a very good singer,
a man of many talents.
Yes,
and he can, one of those talents is playing a dour starship captain. I don't know why. I've said this many times.
Why?
I don't know why they said, let's get Scott Bakula. Charismatic, good-looking man. I mean, he's still good-looking in his uniform, but he's like very sad the entire time.
Yes, he's just going to stand around and
frown.
Yeah. Be angry.
Oh, Scott Bakula.
Oh, well.
Hopefully he never listens to this podcast, because I've said that a lot. And,
I'm sorry, Scott.
I don't know if it was his choice or the producers or whoever, but... I think it was an odd choice, but I can understand. Oh, I can almost understand it, right? Because he's playing this character that is you know, humanity's first foray into interstellar space and all these politics, and so they have to pick like this career military man to lead this expedition. That's not a military expedition, but you know, we're exploring. We're trying to find our place. You have to be careful. So you need someone who is steady and stoic. So it works in that way, but I think they may have forgotten that also people are watching this.
Yeah,
and maybe having an engaging character would be good too.
Exactly.
Because
yes.
Captain Picard is not super wacky pants.
No,
and he's not like Kirk. He's not you know, going around the universe making out with ladies. He lives at the Riker. But he's serious, but also very engaging. You find out a lot about him. You care about him.
He's led by his intelligence, which is a wonderful characteristic, and that intelligence is sort of always on display. And he is even when he is being stern, it is a loving stern. And he's sort of like, I don't know, I feel like he's the dad everyone, you know, everyone wants Picard to be their dad in a way, like a distant dad they can like feel sort of happy about.
Except he doesn't like children, as you're tweeting about.
Yes,
keep the children off of the Enterprise. but we have so little time. I wanted to talk about that,
but
I think we'll save the we'll
save my tweet rant about kids on the Enterprise for later.
Exactly. So let's quickly talk about what happens in this episode.
Okay.
But first, it opens up with this weird scene where they're talking to this interstellar trader, and you know, he's drinking coffee. He likes coffee. He has the super spicy stuff. I found out, in the credits, as I was watching after this scene, they mentioned that Tom Bergeron, everyone's favorite game show host, is in it. And I was like, who's Tom Bergeron play? And then I realized he plays the weird alien trainer.
He's this dude.
He's that guy. And once I realized that, I was like, that's totally Tom Bergeron. It's his voice.
Yep.
It's him. I guess he's a Star Trek fan. And
it was like he had a free day in his schedule, and they were like, oh, come be in this one scene and drink some coffee.
And who would say no to that?
Exactly.
If anyone has ever asked me to be on a Star Trek, an actual Star Trek show, I will gladly sit in makeup for 5 hours to say one line.
Yep.
I don't think it'll ever happen, but he made
the
right choice. Even though this is a weird, I thought that, so he basically says, oh, you know, the Enterprise is out of supplies. I guess they need some engineering equipment. Mm-hmm. He only trades in exotic goods, and there are a bunch of mildly sexist things that happen in this episode. He goes to T'Pol, who's the female Vulcan, and says, "Oh, I have some silk that you might like."
Yeah.
And then Trip is like, "Oh, you'd look really good in those silks." And I was like, "What?"
And this is my first exposure to Trip. I'm like, "Oh, goody."
It seemed inappropriate.
Yes.
He could have said, "You like silks?" Or something. Like it's hard to see. I guess he was smiling a little, so maybe he was just kind of ribbing her, but still, it just came off the wrong way to me.
Does she always spend every episode looking like she's been sucking on a lemon?
Well, that's how she decides to play her Vulcan characteristics, is just being unhappy.
And
she's paired with Trip this entire episode, so you can understand.
Exactly, but again, it's like, I understand this and where they're going with it, but I don't necessarily want to watch it. It's just, anyway, more about that later.
Yes. So, long and the short of it, he's like, "I don't have what you need, but I know where you could find it." And he's very mysterious. and they said, "Well, where?" And he's like, "Well, there's a ship that I found, and I could have, you know, stripped the whole thing, but the crew objected." And they said, "Oh, well, we thought you said it was abandoned." And he's like, "Well, there's no living thing there."
Ooh. Dun, dun, dun.
And they're like, "Oh, all right, well, we need stuff, so we'll just go steal it from this ship." Basically. So they find the ship. They beam down. They're going for, like, this super creepy vibe, right? It's an abandoned ship. And this is another section where I think Trip is a little sexist, because he says to T'Pol, "Oh, are you scared? Because it's a creepy ship." And I'm like, "Oh, man, you only asked the lady there?"
Yeah,
who's like,
yeah,
clearly not scared at all.
And she says, "No, basically Vulcans don't feel fear," which is like, oh, come on. Like, how does a species evolve, like, without feeling fear? Like, you can't just stand there while your enemy eats you. You've got to, you know, Vulcans don't have emotions versus Vulcans have mastered their emotions thing. Mm-hmm. I know different series and different books have treated it different ways, but there's so much interesting stuff in there that just gets jettisoned in favor of Vulcans are basically rocks that think.
Right, and they have no emotions.
Yeah, and that's just not interesting at all. And I feel like if that's where they were taking her, then that's sort of, except we don't have emotions, except we say snide things about, like, your love life.
So, exactly, that's how she gets back to him.
Yeah, which is apparently completely logical. So
that's
anyway.
Cool, yeah.
Yep.
And so, long and the short of it, this abandoned ship is not so abandoned. And they see some shadows. They chase down a guy. They find a hatch, Trip and T'Pol do, and they go in there and they see a hydroponics bay, or an aeroponics bay, I think they call it. And there are people in there. And they're like, "Oh, you better come down here, Captain," because, of course, in the grand tradition of Starfleet captains just beaming down into random places.
Yep.
Captain Archer has decided to go with the away team in his lovely coat, as we mentioned earlier. I did notice those jackets as well. I was like, "Oh, those are good-looking jackets."
Yeah, they're very reflective, too. Yes. I think they're probably a little flashy for day-to-day, but...
if you're going on an away mission, though.
Yeah.
A little chilly.
It's a special occasion.
I also like their flashlights.
Yes. The flashlights are like actual, like they're like mag lights. And he does have, Trip has that one moment where he says nothing like a good scare, and he puts it in under his chin like you're sitting around the campfire. And
I thought that was a
cute moment. The aeroponics, the garden was a bit of a surprise to me. I was like, "Oh, that's really cool." And then I noticed there is nothing to eat in that garden but kumquats. It's just kumquat
That's
trees and like office plants. It's which I don't know. I don't want to know what that's going to do to you, eating nothing but kumquats for like 3 years or however long. It's like, my God, they better have like a cargo bay just full of Tums, because that's the only way there's. I mean, they're not going to get scurvy, which is the good thing.
That's
but
true,
those are nasty little fruits. They're mean.
I didn't even recognize that, but I did think those plants look all alike. It seems like you want a little biodiversity in your aeroponics bay. But
it really does look like they ran down to the corner just nursery, like office nursery, like where you go to buy your office plants and just cleared the place out.
Give them all of us. We want them all.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Some of them are even in those baskets that you give to someone like when they have a birthday. It's hilarious.
Yes, it's true. So we meet.
Sorry, I'm slowing things down. Go ahead.
That's fine. Liana, I guess.
Liana, yes.
It's the first person I think that we meet. And she seems to be mute.
Yes.
She's a lovely lady. Trip, it is clear, will fall for her, and he does, and she's enamored with him because we find out basically he's the first other person she's ever seen.
Yes.
Besides the people that are on the ship. And we find out there's a whole bunch of people on the ship, including...
including...
Odo!
There he is in the back!
It's not Odo.
It's just René Auberjonois.
Exactly. Playing... Memory Alpha tells me his name was Ezrahl. I would never have remembered that.
I know. I think they said it all of once and very quickly.
And so it becomes apparent that these people, well, the story they tell is that we crashed here. We were under attack. We have a dampening field, so you didn't find us. And we're hiding from the people who attacked us. And the Enterprise crew is like, oh, when did this happen? And they say, oh, 3 years ago. And they're kind of like, well, that's a long time just to be hiding on this ship. Mm-hmm. And through... you know, we get a sense that these people really would rather if the Enterprise crew leaves.
Yes.
But they need a little help.
Yeah. They're not too happy to be offered the option to go home. There's a weird cult vibe coming from them.
Yes.
And Archer's treating the captain like, okay, I've known you for all 30 seconds and all. Immediately, I'm not trusting you any farther than I can throw you.
Yeah, they're very suspicious, these people.
Yes, they are. And I want to just talk for a second about having René Auberjonois there in the back. It's like, why? He is an amazing actor. I love him. And Odo is one of my favorite characters from all of Trek. He's just fantastic. He's acting his pants off in this one too.
And he does a great job.
And he does. But it's like it's such a brain teaser for someone who has been watching Trek to not look at him and think, what is Odo doing on this ship?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, did he just really need the work? Or was it, you know, well, we're just going to, you know, bring it, was it like a sort of a stunt casting to up the, you know, the viewers or what? Because certainly for the first 20 minutes that he's there on the screen, I'm just sort of having a hard time with, like, I wanted there to be some sort of connection to, okay, do we find out later that this guy ends up, you know, sort of off in the quadrant where, you know, Odo's from and he ends up, you know, it's really not supposed to be Odo.
Yeah,
and
no connection.
My eyes were having a hard time with that.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I imagine it was just stunt casting because mm-hmm. I can't think of any other reason why.
There are,
as good an actor as he is, there are many other people who could have done a fine job in that same role. And it's not like this episode is particularly momentous or he had a whole heck of a lot to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting character, but they spent very little time with him. So,
yeah.
And even when the grand reveal, which I'm just going to get to because not much happens, so it doesn't matter. We find out that the ship actually hasn't been there for 3 years. It's been there for 22 years, and it wasn't attacked. It crashed, and that they had jettisoned escape pods. So they grab one of the escape pods that's still in orbit, open it up, and there's a corpse in there. But the corpse is of one of the people that they've met on the ship.
Yep.
And so you're like, what?
Yeah.
Although about 20 minutes into this episode, my wife turned to me and said, they're holograms.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what it turns out. They're all holograms except for Odo and his daughter.
Yep.
And Odo thinks he caused it because he was the chief engineer, and his wife dies because he chose to abandon his station and go care for his daughter. The ship crashes, everybody dies, Odo's sad. And then he spends 2 years trying to fix it, he can't fix it, so then he decides, well, I'll just populate it with holograms and that'll be fine.
I want to know what kind of an engineer he was that he couldn't fix the ship enough to fly it off, but he could create AIs that were modeled exactly on the people that they like all the crew that they knew.
That was my question as well, because that seems like a much more difficult task.
Yeah, it really does. And I understand that, you know, maybe it's just he didn't have the parts. but and you know you all you need is like a CPU basically to create these holograms. But on the other hand, the holograms have enough weight to attack people, but phasers go through them,
mm-hmm.
and they can walk through walls, but they're also God knows once you start with the physics on any of these episodes, you're just in trouble. It was a little distracting.
Yes. So I thought this episode would have been much more interesting if they were all, including his daughter, holograms. And
yes.
He was the only person down there.
Yes.
But that is not the way they went.
Yes. It would have made it a little less creepy, too, because I have opinions about this guy sort of keeping his daughter down there.
Yeah, so
And shooting at people who come to you know, offer her a ride away.
Yeah, so he basically is against them getting rescued because the ship has been his home for 22 years and he's happy mm-hmm. there. And his daughter has never asked to leave, so he figures she must be happy there.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out she's not really all that happy there. I mean, I'm sure she would have stayed there, but she goes up to the Enterprise and she has ice cream and she's like, this is awesome. Can I stay here?
they have a conversation about Rocky Road that's very just sort of pedestrian. But
yes. I knew what they were going for, but they didn't do a great job of it.
Yes.
And whose favorite ice cream is Rocky Road, really?
I did like the line where she's talking about how, you know, she got the tour of the ship, and she says, Dr. Phlox let me feed his bat. And and Trip goes, ooh. Like, that really was the highlight, wasn't it? Like he's feeling bad for her that was the highlight of her tour.
She's been stranded
the bat.
For 22 years on one planet, one ship with a hologram and her father, and yep. only eating kumquats. So
yes, only eating kumquats for 22 years.
It's tough. And so, yeah, the long and the short of it is Odo wants to stay, but then he decides, okay, maybe we should go back home. And so Captain Archer's like, well, we'll take you there. And he's like, no, I already have this ship. We just need this list and a crew, because mm-hmm. it's going to be creepily crewed by these holograms I created.
Yes.
Just give us the stuff we need, even though you have low supplies, which is why you're coming here anyway. So they give him all the stuff, and they leave. One assumes that they uh-huh. fix their ship and go home.
Yep. And it was nice to see that the holographic crew back. I wasn't expecting that.
Right.
That they sort of reinstituted the you know, the tech that creates these holographic, you know, people. I would have thought that, you know, it's sort of like you feel like the villain being unmasked on Scooby-Doo, you know, when they have one of these very obvious reveals, and then mm-hmm. it's like, well, we're just not going to see them again. But no, they brought them back, and that was sort of like, oh, well, nice, that because they can help, they can, you know, like fly the crew, you know, fly a ship and whatever, but now we just don't have to pretend that this is the way it actually is. And okay, so now that can I complain about Trip?
Oh, please.
Or is that
do.
Just like the most obvious thing? That it's like the low hanging fruit of this episode is Trip just needs to shut the hell up.
He does say a lot of inadvisable things,
smarmy and condescending, and
you can't, he doesn't even have the excuse of, you know, it's the 60s, it was a different time.
Yes. Yes, this is not cute nostalgic sexism. This is just ridiculously like boring sexism. It's just so obvious and one note. And the problem is that then even when he has like the moral high ground, I just want him to shut up. Like he's, you know, he and Liana have this, you know, thing where basically they exchange three lines and you know, now that's a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the end, after the unmasking, when they're trying to get, what's his name? Ezreal?
Yes.
Odo to, you know, basically go home. And Trip says, she deserves more. And it's like, of course, he is 100% right. But he's known her for 6 hours at this point. And I really wanted Odo to say, I'm sorry, who the hell were you again? Oh, right. You're the guy who's known my daughter for 6 hours and is thinking with his dick right now. Like, that, it's just, it's like, it's the writing and the character, and it's just not, and it's something that I was actually a little more disappointed than, you know, the reason I'm sort of ranty about it right now is that Trek is supposed to be better than this. You know, mm-hmm. even if it's, you know, prequel Trek, even if it's, you know, Trek of only, you know, 2,200 and whatever, you know, we're certainly supposed to be better than we are now about this stuff with that, you know, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, you can do interesting stuff with, you know, gender dynamics and all of that without, you know, creating this guy who's basically like a Neanderthal, and then wanting us to root for him. That's the problem.
Yeah,
it's like I'm supposed to like this guy, and I really, really don't.
He's like a frat guy that, you know, he thinks he's being kind of cute and
yeah,
but he's just being awful and not awful. That's but he's being maybe a little awful, a tiny bit awful.
He's being a tiny bit awful. Yeah.
And the awfulness is that he is unaware of it. He thinks he's being charming.
He's
not.
There's this one scene going back to with him and now do he and T'Pol end up having a thing like on the? I mean, that's where it's obviously going. Is it like later in the series they end up?
I do not believe they do, but I could.
Oh, really?
There could be an episode where they do.
Okay.
I can't imagine T'Pol taking his crap that much, but
yeah. Well, there was. There's this one line where she says, where they're arguing, where she's like, well, you're certainly paying a lot of attention to Liana or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Oh, right. That you like her, you think she's competent. And there's this, I quoted the whole darn thing. I'm trying to figure out where it is. Oh, the last time you found someone this competent, she says, was on like some planet, you know, Scimitar 4 or whatever, and you wound up carrying her child. And I really did not want to look that up to see whether it was an actual episode, because it sounded just so awesome as this throwaway reference. Like, yeah, remember that time you went off, you know, on shore leave and you got pregnant trip? Yeah, that was, you know, that was really smart of you. Try not to do that again this time. Just sort of like a wah-wah thing. And unfortunately, it was a real episode. I feel like I went and looked it up and they did a whole episode about it. And I'm sad because whatever that episode was can't have been as awesome as, like, pregnant trip in my brain. Like, having to, you know, like, figure out how to deal with this.
Yes,
and the very fun sort of gender swappy sort of fun that could come with it, but oh well.
Well, I think we can agree that the one shining light in this episode was Odo, and
yes,
he has some
yes.
great scenes where, you know, he's conflicted about what he's done, but he thinks he's done the best, and
yeah.
he's worried about his daughter talking to this trip guy, and he's worried about making the right decision, and he's coming from a good place, but he's just going about it in a horrible way.
But it is a little creepy, right? She's 27.
It is a little creepy.
Like, she's been there since she's 5. These are the only people she knows. I hope she hasn't had any, like, relationships with them.
You have to wonder.
Yeah, and, like, what is, like, the age of, I don't know, what do they call it, age of majority, like the interstellar mm-hmm. age of majority, like when you turn 18, you can make decisions for yourself. It did bother me that no one said to her, so what do you want? Not yeah. what's best for your daughter or, you know, what have you done to her, but hey, you know, lady with the chipmunk eyes standing back there, what do you want?
It's true, they never ask her.
No.
They just decide, okay, let's go.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's a problem, too.
Yeah.
Because she might want to just stay there with him.
She might.
I am happy eating kumquats and talking with my holographic friends.
And yeah, maybe he wants to leave. Maybe he wants to go home and she wants to stay there and you know, play with the fake people or whatever.
That's true. And he does have one thing going. I mean, it is creepy, but he never told his daughter, that they weren't holograms. She always knew what was
yes.
happening.
Yes.
So that is the saving grace, I think.
And she calls it, she says it's the lie you've told so many times that you start to believe it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And, But it is, like, I did really feel bad for him in that scene where he's talking with Archer at the very end. They're up in Archer's ready room, and he's just sort of sitting there looking incredibly uncomfortable. And he says, you know, he hasn't been in space in, you know, over 20 years, he says. And, you know, it's – he just, you know, it feels weird to him. And he's just sort of sitting there, and there's this, like, nice scene of him just sort of sitting, like, with his hand on his face, like, he just, a man who does not know what to do, whose mm-hmm. life has just brought to this place where he is just completely at a loss. And it's like, yeah, he really can act, like, rings yeah. around most of the people that they have on Star Trek as guests or whatever, but yeah. I really wish they had done a little more with him. Oh, well. Like, the last 10 minutes, I think, are the best of the episode. Once the grand reveal happens and the twist everyone saw coming, or at least, you know, some semblance of it that everyone saw coming, is final. It's like, okay, wish we could have done that, like, 20 minutes earlier so we could have, you know, talked about the ramifications of this and let Renee do that awesome acting that he does.
But, yeah, I think the problem, and this is a problem that happens so much in Enterprise, is that they focus on the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
They have great ideas, and then they spend all their time focusing on this, what they think is this mystery and the creepy yeah. ship, and, you know, oh, it's such a shocking discovery, but it wasn't. And the interesting thing is this decision that why has this man decided to do this, and the relationship with his daughter, and how this new spaceship arriving changes all of this. That's mm-hmm. the interesting part of this episode.
Yeah.
Not that they're holograms and, you know, you didn't know they were holograms, and now they are, and there's a little fight.
Especially since I was thinking about it afterwards, I'm like, this episode, this plot could have been any of the Star Trek series.
True.
It was like Star Trek plot number 7. Like, and I think the neat thing about having, you know, Star Trek plot number 7 in Enterprise would have been, how did people deal with this when they were new to space? Why... You know, because they do all the right things. The Enterprise crew does all the right things. They try to help, and then they realize, okay, there's something funny going on around here, so let's try to figure out what it is. But we're not going to be too insistent about it. We're not going to try to step on any toes. You know, we're going to do it the nice way and, you know, sort of surreptitiously pulling one of these pods and wait until we have evidence to... you know, to bring to them, and then, you know, sort of politely ask them, why are you lying to us? Instead of, you know, basically acting like a military or like hotheads and going in and, you know, securing the place and maybe, you know, firing a few phasers from the ship and, you know, warning shots and then taking everyone on board in custody or whatever. And it's like, no, I don't want them to be the kind of people who do that, mm-hmm. but it would probably make for a more interesting show if they did. It yes. sort of pointed out, you know, I think one ding that gets leveled against Star Trek as a whole is how it can seem really bloodless at times and clean and mm-hmm. nice. And especially, you know, I think a lot of this is in retrospect when you know, after series like Battlestar Galactica and whatever sort of, you know, the more rough and ready and you know, living on the edge of desperation sort of stuff.
Lived in universes.
Exactly. Very lived in universes with dirt in the corners and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you go and you watch Star Trek and you have to remember, oh, right, this was groundbreaking. This didn't look weird. This wasn't like, why are people talking like this and just sitting around having discussions? Where's the sci-fi? You know, where's the action? This was the way it was, but even so, this is even more bloodless than usual, and so that was just sort of annoying.
And it's holographic blood. Anyway,
I sound really pissy, but you know, it was fun. It was fun watching this episode. It was fun watching an episode of Star Trek again. This, I think, was the first time in, it's probably got to be years, that I actually sat down and watched an episode of Star Trek from beginning to end. So that was. That was
well, see, it's fun. Not all just bad.
No, it isn't all bad. It is just sort of like, oh, look at all these missed connections. Look at all of these like missed notes. But I have to go check. I bet the fan fiction community on Enterprise is fantastic, because that's sort of like where fan fiction lives in those missed moments. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, if they had just connected those. Well, let me go connect those for you in this, you know, in this thing that I'm going to write that maybe has sex in it and maybe doesn't. But it's when you have like, it's like fertile ground to work with. It's when they get 75% of the way there and you're like, if you just had that 25%, let me do that for you.
I know what you can do to fix this.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast and watching this episode of Enterprise.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Scott. It was a lot of fun.
And I am not a hologram.
Well, neither am I, usually.
Next on Random Trek, Deep Space Nine, Season 2, Blood Oath.